Coming up on Tech News Today, everything's about to change for Hulu. OnLive is being replaced by OnLive. It's a clever move. And everyone's all excited about a Synaptics trackpad. We'll tell you why. You'll be excited too. Next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, August 20th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. Just takes a webcam and a click to turn your online meeting into high-definition video conferencing. Meet with colleagues anywhere in the world, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use promo code TNT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone from your home or office. Find out what your gadget is worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zaktar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Father Robert Ballester of Twiat joining us today as well. We're going to discuss some stories with him in a bit, but we'll start with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse.
Oops.
On Friday, OnLive performed a deft form of bankruptcy, which allowed it to sell all its assets to a new company that will also be called OnLive. That new company is backed by Lauder Partners and announced it will hire almost half of the staff back and keep most of the rest as consultants paid in options until they get enough money to hire them back too. Users of OnLive should see no disruption of service. HTC announced today it lost $40 million it had invested in the original OnLive.
A July internal memo between News Corp and Disney and obtained by Variety include information about future exclusivity, ad count, selective content access, and a plan to, quote, outline transition path for new CEO, discuss potential candidates and process. A management buyout of Hulu stakeholder Providence Equity Partners expected to close in September. Plus, this memo point to some sort of a game-changing future for the service.
People are excited about a new trackpad. Yeah, I'm serious. These people are excited.
Woo.
Synaptics is showing off its new Force Pad.
Which
is a new pressure-sensitive trackpad. That has no moving parts. It can detect 64 levels of pressure from your fingers. The company is also offering new keyboards called ThinTouch, which drop the scissor mechanism for a slider mechanism. Both the Force Pad and the ThinTouch are really thin and are expected in laptops next year.
Hence the name. Motorola filed a complaint with the International Trade Commission on Friday, claiming Apple infringes seven of its patents, including location reminders, email notification, and voice recognition, among others. As is usual with ITC complaints, it seeks a ban on infringing devices. This is the second complaint Motorola has made against Apple, the first regarding a Wi-Fi patent, should receive a decision on August 24th. That's this Friday.
According to someone familiar with the matter who spoke to Bloomberg about the matter, Samsung and Apple are meeting today in an attempt to resolve their smartphone patent dispute before a U.S. jury begins deliberating.
After all that.
The jury must love this.
Yeah, I know, right?
That was time well spent. The company's lawyers will report to U.S. District Judge Lucy Koh in federal court in San Jose, California, on the outcome of today's telephone discussion between Apple's Tim Cook and Samsung's Kwan Oh-hyun.
Oh, the CEOs.
Yeah, they're the top dogs. They
might be able to.
Two men enter, one man leaves.
one happy. Best Buy's got a new head. Hubert Joly is the new CEO of Best Buy. He'd previously worked for Carlson, which operates restaurants and hotels like the Radisson. Best Buy says that Joly has expertise in turnaround and growth. He starts running the company in September.
Apple has responded to concerns that iOS is vulnerable to SMS spoofing. Apple issued a statement saying SMS can be spoofed on any phone, but iMessage verifies addresses, which protects against such spoofing. Apple wisely cautions customers to be careful if directed to unknown websites or addresses over SMS.
Watch out, Amazon. Barnes & Noble announced today it's expanding, for the first time internationally, Nook e-readers and digital bookstore to the UK, launching in the fall. The company will offer its e-ink readers, the Nook Simple Touch, and will open its Nook store to consumers in the UK, providing access to more than 2.5 million titles.
In the fallout from the Oracle-Google World Series of Patent Trials, Judge William Alsup ordered both companies to disclose any payments made to bloggers to write about the trial. Google and Oracle both deny retaining anyone to write specifically about the lawsuit. Oracle disclosed it has hired Florian Miller of the Floss blog as a consultant, but denied any connection to the case. Oracle also accused Google of running a network of influencers, which Google denied.
More on Oracle. A post over at MariaDB says that Oracle is hiding MySQL test cases and revision history is not being updated. Test cases are extremely valuable to developers. This has people thinking Oracle is doing whatever it can to kill MySQL. Oracle has not yet responded.
Don't kill MySQL. Well, it's time to take a quick break and thank our sponsor for Tech News Today. During the summer, everybody's in a different schedule. I was gone for 3 days last week. You got people traveling all over the place. Father Robert, you know about traveling. You're always all over the place.
I live on planes.
Vacation, short days, working remotely. It's almost impossible to get clients and colleagues in the same place. So don't bother. Have a face-to-face meeting using GoToMeeting with HD Faces. Then people can be wherever they darn well please. And you still get your meetings done this summer. Here's how it works. With GoToMeeting by Citrix, you take a webcam, you click, you collaborate in group HD video, and you can even join from an iPad. So if you're sitting in the airport, you can do your meeting from there. See your attendees eye to eye while collaborating on documents in real time. You'll feel instantly connected, even if you're thousands of miles apart. Plus, GoToMeeting is easy to use. Just download the free GoToMeeting app if you're on the iPad and join right in. We use it here all the time, talking to clients, talking to people, and you feel a lot better about the fact that your message is being understood because you can see people nodding and understanding or maybe looking confused and you get a chance to clarify. Here's what you should do, though. My listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Don't wait. For this special offer, visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TNT. Be sure to use that promo code TNT. And we thank Citrix and GoToMeeting for their support of Tech News Today. Father Robert Ballester, welcome to the show. Good to have you back, man.
Great to be back. I'm surprised that they haven't changed the locks yet.
No. Yeah. This Week in Enterprise Tech is doing well. If you see that number start to dive, though, expect the locks.
Well, I'm grateful that Leo lifted the restraining order.
It's good to be back. You guys had fun without me?
We had a lot of fun without
you, Tom. We always do,
more fun than you.
Was it fun? No, we missed you.
Ah, stop.
We're glad that you're back. No, really.
Yeah, now we have less work. So yeah.
Oh, I see. Well, that makes sense.
This is just a coasting week now. Tom's back.
Well, let's start with your story then, Sarah.
Okay.
Hulu CEO facing some big changes. These are all rumors, but there's a leaked memo.
Yeah, so the memo comes from July conversation between News Corp and Disney, both parent companies, owning parts of Hulu. And there are some bullet points that were outlined these are things that we've talked about in the past that Hulu is going to have to figure out one way or another. A lot of this stems from Providence Equity Partners basically just trying to get out of their Hulu stake. This is something that was reported back in April. It is expected to close in September. At that point,
Jason Kilar goes, I want out of my stake too.
Well, that's one of the scenarios that sources have laid out. It's like Providence can cash out, but some executives who have enough shares may also be able to cash out. People who are familiar with his compensation package say that he could possibly cash out up to $100 million. Now, again, these are rumors. This is speculation, but this is something that is a potential scenario. Now, of course, if he cashes out and he steps down, that's one scenario. In this memo that was leaked, one of the quotes was outline transition plan for new CEO, discuss potential candidates and process, as I mentioned back in the news views. So people are talking about the idea that Jason Kilar could no longer be CEO. Is that because he's expected to step down? Is that because he's already not really running the show and the transition is just taking a while? Either of those things could be true. Some other interesting bullet points that were discussed in this memo is the idea of no more exclusivity for current season content, which was once restricted to Hulu. So let's say Disney and News Corp, for example, could say, yeah, Hulu can get some of the stuff, but we'll offer the same content on our online component websites.
And actually YouTube. Remember, Hulu was built to take on YouTube, right? But it hasn't ended up being like that. And I think everybody's softened on YouTube. So now you could say, oh, well, YouTube's got that streaming service, that on-demand service. We'd like to sell our stuff and rent it through there. Let's also put it up for streaming.
Exactly. And that, I mean, it doesn't, it doesn't actually change what Hulu offers, but it makes them a lot less attractive because they're just not the only game in town.
Right.
Then again, Hulu Plus is a little bit different, but this is just talking about Hulu for now. Content parity, for example, which, again, offers ABC.com, Fox.com, some of the rights that you think of Hulu as being the only place to get some content. Exclusive super distribution rights. Hulu once retained to syndicate content to third-party sites like Yahoo and AOL. That power would potentially go back into the hands of Disney and News Corp. So really, it's kind of chopping off Hulu at the knee in a bit. Then again, Fox supposedly wants to increase to 4 ads per commercial on Hulu.com, you know, because Hulu commercials aren't annoying already. That would just be awesome.
If they more would commercials. Do different commercials each time,
sure.
Maybe it wouldn't bother me quite as much.
Right.
But sometimes you see the same thing over and over again.
So you do on Hulu Plus as well.
I mean,
that's
I know.
One of the things that people complain the most about. It's like, wait a second, I pay $8 a month, but I still see ads on Hulu Plus. You see fewer ads.
Yeah.
But
well, I mean,
yeah,
I pay for my cable
them.
Service and I see ads there too. But for some reason, it doesn't feel the same when you're comparing it to Netflix.
Well, when you're buying a la carte, you expect different than a cable service. When you're buying a cable service, it's en masse. It's what they give me. But if I'm buying a channel, if I'm buying a specific content provider, I want to get a better experience than I could if I was just logging in for free.
Yeah, I think you're right. We think of Hulu as a channel, not as a service.
Right.
And the operators want us to think of it as a service. Mm-hmm. Also, Fox and Disney are at each other's throats. Disney doesn't want to pursue the authentication scheme. They want to just use Hulu as another outlet and spread their stuff as far and wide as possible, whereas Fox is really pushing...
They've got that eight-day delay.
Let's do eight-day delays unless people authenticate as a subscriber that we know we're making money off them and then use Hulu as sort of a TV Anywhere model.
I wonder if Hulu is going to end up being like this old, abandoned place. If these companies want to have all their content and most of their content on their own sites, it means you have to have your own ability to get to those sites all the time. One of the cool things about Hulu was this idea you go to this one place for all your content, except CBS, because they didn't join into this little party. But the thing is, if it's on YouTube and it's available somewhere else, but I would imagine that you'd have some of the least popular shows everywhere. And at ABC.com, you'll have just this one thing. Like, I mean, what Fox is doing is, you know, pretty on par with that. So it's just kind of depressing to see that this will be all disparate again, because then that means I have to organize it, or something like Clicker can, but I want to be able to find my content, and that seems like it could be a problem.
Does this kill Hulu? I mean, that's in the back of my mind, that's what I'm thinking, because without the exclusivity, without the lock-ins, without the ability to force their partners to put their content on Hulu, they can go and find a better deal. And if they can find a better deal, what's Hulu? Hulu's going to be the MySpace of the YouTube class.
I think that what happened here is the television networks panicked and started Hulu because they wanted to crush YouTube. They wanted to teach them a lesson. They didn't want to get Napstered. And so they created this thing, and Jason Kilar and company made a fantastic product. And they said, look, what users want is this. Let's give it to them. And then as the industry developed and the industry realized that YouTube wasn't the threat that they thought it was, and Google bent over backwards and still is bending over backwards to cooperate and change the way things are done and put some more controls in place, the industry realized, oh, well, we've created a monster with Hulu. It's actually competing with us, and we're
not comfortable
with that. Remember
Jason Kilar's it was like a public denouncement of the traditional TV model. It really upset a lot of people.
Yeah.
People were like, what is he doing?
So I think Kilar is like, look, I'm out of here. As soon as you let me get out in September, I'm gone. You do whatever you want with this thing. And I don't think the networks really know what they can do with it now, except, like you say, I think they're going to break it.
If the memo's from July, though, this information about Kilar leaving, I mean, his name was thrown around a lot to be the head of Yahoo for a while. That was,
and it's come up other times, too. I mean, to the point where it's, I mean, is he just looking for kind of anything?
I
the hat's in the ring?
I think he's waiting for this Providence thing to wash out so he can get his $100 million or whatever. and then he'll be available. But he couldn't go to Yahoo right now because he would lose too much money.
Yeah, and then also he would be taking on quite the undertaking by moving to Yahoo as well.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that would have scared him off. But
$100 million is incentive.
It's not worth both, losing $100 million and taking on Yahoo at the same time. All right, let's talk about this OnLive stuff that happened over the weekend. We mentioned in the news fuse they have closed the company, fired everyone. If you heard those rumors on Friday, they were true. They've also started a new company. and hired some of the people back. They got Lauder Partners to give them a bunch of money. They're still looking for more backers, by the way, if you're interested. Filed for something called Assignment for the Benefit of Creditors. This is different than Chapter 7 or Chapter 11 bankruptcy. It lets the company wind down their current structure. And what they do is they assign all of the assets. So they're basically liquidating OnLive. They create an entity that they assign the assets to, and then that entity sells the assets to a new company. Now, usually this is meant just as liquidation. Usually it's a way to kind of dissolve all the assets in the most profitable way possible. What they did, which is pretty interesting, is use it to recreate OnLive, to just essentially restructure. I don't know if that's common or not, but it seems pretty clever. So they have taken all the assets, all the trademarks and the servers and technology and the patents, gave it to an assignee. That assignee sold it to a new company backed by Lauder Partners that will now be called OnLive because they get the trademark.
Who is this assignee? We don't know.
The assignee is probably some liquidation specialist or something. Uh-huh. It kind of doesn't matter. I don't know who actually handles it. All they do is they pass along the assets, pass along the money, or the debt in this case. And now the new company doesn't have to be liable for all the debts. They're only liable for the current contracts. And I get, from what I read, and I'm far from an expert on this, though, the advantage to this over Chapter 11 is that you can keep your current partnerships. You don't have to file in court. You can do it a lot faster. And OnLive wanted to turn on a dime. They basically said, look, we got Lauder Partners to agree to fund this. Let's maneuver and save the company by liquidating the old company and starting fresh. But what that means is that nobody who had stock in the original company gets any money. That includes the founders and the executives. Like, that stock is now worthless. And none of them have stock in the new company. And that includes HTC, which we mentioned. They lost. They're saying we've lost $40 million. Now, they may get some of that back in the eventual wind down of the original OnLive company. But they're not confident that they're going to get anything back. So they just wrote it off.
And yeah, there's like, nothing to get back. I mean, basically, he's sold off the IP. He's sold off all the actual core assets. So what he's really doing is he's taking care of the debt of the creditors who have invested quite a bit of money, and the creditors who were actually employees get bumpkis.
Yeah.
Now, you know, you can look at this both ways. It looks like a scam. It looks like, okay, he gets to keep the company, but he doesn't have to pay anyone who's currently there. But there's another side to it, and that is he really believes in this approach. He believes in this company. He's been working on it for 10 years. He doesn't want to see it die. He's not taking any compensation. He's not getting any profit from selling off his stock. So he really is just going to start a brand new company. Sorry, but that's his first obligation.
That's a really good point that you made. He is not taking any compensation in the new company. He's not getting any stock in the new company yet. Mm-hmm. He may yet. In fact, he will, I'm sure. But the executives all took a pay cut. They are hiring 50% of the staff back without giving them a pay cut, or at least almost 50% is what they say. The rest of the staff, or at least most of the rest of the staff, they want to keep on as consultants and pay them in stock options until they get enough funding to hire them back as well. So they have to fire everyone in order to wind down the old company, and they're trying to hire back as many as they can. They got themselves in this situation, apparently, by overbuilding capacity. They had 8,000 servers leased, and they only had 2,000 simultaneous users at any peak. So they overspent. And now that they've learned how this business works, they think they have a better way to keep the run rate down.
I'm just very curious about, I mean, obviously these guys believe in this company. That's why they're restarting it, instead of selling it off. That's what I'm kind of curious about. Why not just go, okay, let's sell it to Microsoft. Let's sell it to somebody else. Instead of going, we're going to do this quick switch, make sure that we can survive. It's this idea that if they can't make it work the second time, I mean, they have to seriously think about being acquired, because Gaikai got picked up by Sony. This is what I was expecting for OnLive. I thought there'd be a lot of suitors coming after this company, because cloud gaming is the future, and OnLive also has like desktop applications, other applications that work for your computers. So it's not like just gaming. It's, you know, there are other remote PC situations there. So I'm glad that they're trying to do this again on their own. But I mean, they have to seriously consider getting acquired by somebody.
I think they're continuing to do it rather than doing it again. I think they're looking at it as, we will go out of business and no one will buy us because it's a toxic asset unless we do this. And they may yet get bought by someone. But I think what they realize is, we were the first. We were blazing the trail. We were too early and we did it wrong. And the only way to dig ourselves out of it is to get rid of all that debt and essentially start fresh on the balance books. so that we can afford to do it right. And I think this is pretty clever, and it may be the thing that ends up saving.
Well, it's clever, but I mean, imagine if you were an employee of OnLive. If you were laid off and you didn't get your job back, that's one thing. But even if you did, you no longer have any equity, and maybe some of those employees had quite a bit. I don't know how long, you know, they've all been there. If you're a company like HTC, a lot of times when you have large investors, they have clauses where, you know, if the company gets sold off or liquidated, you get your money back first. There's sort of a pecking order as far as that. This seems to wipe that clean.
Nobody got any money.
Right. Yeah. So HTC, yeah, it's kind of like, okay, I don't know. I can see HTC not sitting well with the company. I don't know if we can expect lawsuits related from something like this. I've just never heard of anything like this before.
Oh, there will be lawsuits. And this actually, I do know one case in which this happened before. Orange County Steelworks, which is actually related to Orange County Choppers, they sold all their assets and then went into bankruptcy. And then they got sued. And ultimately what it came down to was the bankruptcy judge had to decide whether or not all the transactions were made in good faith. And in that case, they said, no, you know, you were selling machinery and equipment for way below its actual value. In this case, I don't know, because the executives aren't taking any benefits from the sale. They could say, no, this was the only way we could continue the company. And the bankruptcy judge could just very much agree.
And California has a unique setup of this kind of bankruptcy. Other states have versions of it, but California's is the most friendly. So this is probably going to work out for them.
Yeah.
Let's talk about hardware, though. Synaptics Force Pad. We were all cheering for that.
Woo-hoo!
For the trackpad.
Trackpad.
Why are people so excited about these?
Well, because it works differently than any trackpad you've ever used before. This is from Synaptics, which is actually technology that's in around 70% of PC trackpads. So chances are you're already using one. The new Force Pad is what they call it, and If it works the way Synaptics is used across the board now, we can expect this sort of trackpad to become the standard in the majority of PC laptops. So here's what's interesting about it. No more mouse clicking. No more mouse clicking at all. What it relies on is pressure tracking that detects up to 5 fingers at once. It senses 1,000 grams of force with 64 levels of differentiation, support for new gestures and actions. So what this means pretty much is, okay, instead of clicking to perform an action, you have a variety of sensor touches. So maybe I want to move to a different area of the screen. I tap the screen lightly. Maybe I'm watching a video and it's playing at normal speed, and I want to fast forward. Well, I touch the trackpad just so much, and it starts to fast forward because I'm holding down. And maybe then I drill down a little bit harder, and it fast forwards faster because it understands that I mean it a little bit more. Then when I take my finger off of the trackpad, it goes back to regular
play. So this isn't just like we've had mouse gestures on trackpads for a long time.
Exactly.
This is adding depth.
It's almost like the Z-axis of trackpads. Yeah, it's really interesting. What's also interesting is that it's thinner due to not needing to build in a click mechanism. So you could expect possibly thinner laptops. You offer a little bit more room. Lots of gestures. Not just the idea of press and hold. There's all sorts of stuff, which is also stuff that's built into what Windows is working on for its new laptops and just specifications. Also, something that Synaptics is working on is a new keyboard called the Thin Touch. And it's interesting because it's a thinner keyboard because the entire surface of the keyboard has a capacitive touch sensor. So you've got thinner laptops and more accurate keystrokes because apparently instead of going straight down, it actually goes a little bit to the side.
And that's how it detects that you pressed it?
Well, that's how it moves.
Uh-huh.
That's how it moves. It moves more. It requires less depth in order to move. And it, apparently in tests with Synaptics, they say that people say, we love this keyboard. Sounds really good. And yes, there's capacitive touch as far as the keys go. So there might be a difference between actually depressing the letter S and touching the letter S.
Hmm.
I'm not exactly sure how that works, but it's interesting stuff. I really like this idea of the trackpad, though.
I don't like chiclet keyboards. I still miss the old PS2 keyboard.
Yeah, I know. Clicky, clicky.
And I don't think I would like this, although they say you won't notice the difference. So maybe I just won't like it at the same level that I don't like chiclet keyboards.
Well, what I like about this is that you're adding another sensor technology that would just be added to every laptop, every desktop, every keyboard. You know, we don't really know how this is going to be used yet, but it is definitely a different technology than what we've had in the past. It's not a button. It's not a touchpad. It's another class of input device, and that's always good. Now, what manufacturers actually do with it and how they end up working this into OS, that remains to be seen, but it's kind of exciting. I mean, I'm pumped.
Yeah, I wouldn't be too excited. I mean, the trackpads on PC laptops have been awful. Synaptex makes some amazing, amazing trackpads. The thing is, that's one area where manufacturers cheap out on. And this kind of technology, which is, I think, going to be really great for Windows 8, because instead of swiping and swiping and swiping, you can just hold down and like kind of tilt that. That was the demo video, the way they were showing, moving from screen to screen. I believe somebody, Dan Ackerman, was saying on CNET, this is probably going to work its way to premium ultrabooks. It's going to be like, this will set it apart, but it's not going to be in everything at first because it's going to be expensive. It's thinner. It's going to be very, very rare, I would imagine. It's not going to be like, I don't think there's going to be a revolution in trackpads when we're going
to laptops.
Well,
that's true of any new thing, right? You know, when it comes out, it's more expensive, and it's only available in a few products, and then eventually it gets cheaper to make.
It seems like this is a good eventual standard, though. Because like you said, I mean, trackpads just vary. It depends on what laptop you're using. It depends on who made it. They don't all work the same. I mean, unless you're using an Apple, that's completely different. It would be nice to have a trackpad that has this capacitive touch that, yes, there's going to be a learning curve, but once people get used to it, works the same no matter who you're buying it from.
And all this stuff's going to be just great for ultrabooks on top of that. If you can have a thinner keyboard and you can have a thinner trackpad and more space for battery, I mean, that's what I want, a laptop that can go all day with battery because there's less space taken up.
Why I think this will catch on, and I think it will, is because of the fact that you don't have to think as much using this.
Now, yes.
there's a learning curve to being like, oh, I don't click anymore. Mm-hmm. That will upset some people. But essentially, it just seems like it would be more intuitive.
Well, when I got rid of the left and right mouse click, yes, that was weird at first. But you get used to it really quickly, and now it makes a lot more sense.
I control click all of the time on the single button mouse in OS X. I can't lose the two clicks. I love
maybe
that contextual
menu. Maybe you're not a good
menu.
Candidate for new trackpad, Tom.
Oh, I'm not. No, I'm the worst candidate.
You don't even like chiclet keyboards.
I know, exactly.
Get off my lawn.
USB. That's crap. Let's take a quick break, though, and thank our other sponsor today, Gazelle. You want the latest iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone? You want to pay for that upgrade? You want to sell your old one? You may be sitting there thinking, you know what? I know there's going to be a new iPhone announced, and I know I want it, and I want to sell my old iPhone, and I know the faster that I sell my old iPhone, the more money I'll get for it. But how do I do that when I don't even know when the announcement is? We think it's coming September 12th, but we don't know. Gazelle's doing a great thing. They'll lock in your quote for 30 days. And in fact, starting today, I think if you go in and put an iPhone in, they'll lock it in for a little more, just to give you a little extra padding in case you want to sell that iPhone in advance of a new iPhone. But you can sell all kinds of products over there, iPhones, iPads, Android smartphones. Go to Gazelle, pop in that product, find out how much it is, and lock in that quote for 30 days. Gazelle will pay for the shipping. They'll give you a label to print out. Sometimes they'll even send you a box. And then you'll get paid fast by check, PayPal, or Amazon gift card. And you get 5% more if you choose the Amazon gift card. So get paid fast. Lock in that quote now. Because gadgets don't get more expensive. They paid out almost $50 million to over 300,000 customers. So be one of those. Get a cut. Go check it out. Find out what your gadget is worth. It only takes a couple minutes to find out. Do it now. Gazelle.com. GAZELLE.com. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Back to the discussions. And speaking of iPhones, it's how we tell the weather? What?
Yeah, there's very odd data coming out of this survey by Online Publishers Association, which looked at mediums that one cannot live without. And the idea was the weather data was about smartphone users. That's like what they used first on their devices is weather. But it turns out 67% of the people surveyed said they can't live without their PC or laptop. 62% said television. But smartphones had 33%. If you combine that with feature phones, that's 56%. So apparently people can't live without their phones, but they would rather have a PC.
They can't live without their PC more than their phones. That surprises me. I think that's going to change. I think that's just a lag in adoption. I think in 5 years, this will be fully reversed. Smartphone will be up there at the top.
I think more surprising is that people could not live without newspapers, 16%, 13% for tablets. So tablets not exactly as popular as a newspaper, according to this survey.
You know, a newspaper is still easier to read. When I was at the hotel on vacation and you got the newspaper delivered to the door and you pick it up, it's like I scanned 6 stories faster than I ever could on any app.
That's because you hate Flipboard.
Well, I do, but no, I don't hate Flipboard. Words in my mouth. I don't use Flipboard, and maybe I should, but I always have to think, right? It's like right. The paper, you pick it up, and you immediately, you're informed.
Well, that would explain the television as well.
Why are you laughing at me, Sarah?
I'm laughing because what are you talking about? You have to read with your eyes either way. I mean, the paper doesn't
have
just
to click
let
on
you
it.
Right. You can just scan, though. It's a matter of looking at a page with 5 stories and scanning across and going, yeah. That's the one I want to do, versus having to flip.
Okay, so
one.
If a tablet was as big as an actual newspaper, paper that was unfolded, you would be happier, is what you're saying.
No, I just want to be able to pick it up and have it immediately show me a bunch of stories fast. I don't want to have to take action to do it. That's the nice thing about a specialized device.
You know, there could be a generational thing here, because I do the same thing. I love the feel
of a
newspaper.
Tom's in a much older generation, is what you're saying.
Well, no. I include myself in this. I'd like to see multiple stories at the same time so I can sort of zero in on the facts. I do a lot of work with youth groups, and I actually asked them about this. And they told me that, well, they get their news from their feeds, from Twitter, from Facebook. Their friends tell them the stories that are important, and that's what they read.
Yeah.
So no, does this not matter in 10 years?
Well, and that was the thing, that because that's the way I get my news too, right? I launch a news app from the BBC or I look at my Twitter feed or I look at Google Plus and I see stuff. And then this weekend being not forced, but having the newspaper thrown in front of me, it was a weird thing. Like I was seeing something new, like, who isn't this nifty? I get lots of curated stories right away without having to click in. It's pretty nifty.
I'm liking this episode because you're ready. You don't want new keyboards. You don't want a tablet. I'm surprised you even have a laptop at all.
Yeah, I kind of hate it. No. I actually prefer the technology for many vast number of reasons. I just wish it would mimic that part of newspapers. And I think that's why some people are still saying they couldn't live without their newspaper.
I do have to say, I laughed when I read the title in the doc, just because I've actually done this. In where I live in D.C., I'm in the garden level. It's the basement. And I live next to my bed is right next to a window. And I keep my cell phone on the windowsill. And just a couple of weeks ago, I actually turned over, picked up my cell and hit the weather app so I could find out how. And I realized, oh my God, I'm staring out the window. What am I? Why am I turning on my weather app?
Because you want to know the degree.
I want the humidity. I was looking for the humidity.
Data. I do the same thing. First thing I look at every morning, it pretty much is the weather app.
Really?
Yeah.
Gosh, I guess I all we do is sit inside all day. It doesn't matter.
Very good point.
I want to know what touché. I need to wear from the parking garage to the studio.
Fleece?
We have totally undermined your discussion. I like there anything rails? Else of this from the study?
Yeah, apparently iPhone users are more receptive to ads on their devices, apparently. Android users, not so much of a fan. I mean, but then again, neither. 21% of iPhone users are like, yeah, they're relevant. 13% on Android. So nobody's exactly thrilled with the ads, but iPhone users more likely also to take action after seeing an ad. So they're just buying stuff left and right. Like, ooh, cool. Check this out.
Another interesting discussion going on over on Facebook at Yammer CEO David Sachs' account. He wrote, and of course, he sold his company for $1.2 billion. So he's got a unique perspective. But he says, I think Silicon Valley as we know it may be coming to an end. In order to create a successful new company, you have to find an idea that, one, has escaped the attention of the major internet companies, 2, is capable of being launched and proven out for $5 million, and 3, is protectable from onslaught of big companies. How many ideas like that are left? Now, Marc Andreessen, the guy who created Netscape, he's a big venture capitalist now, says an infinite number of ideas like that are left. Human creativity is limitless, which doesn't make it easy, but does mean the opportunity is unending. Now, I also noticed over the weekend, Wall Street Journal ran a story about how electronics startups are starting to catch all the attention. Nest making the thermostat, or Ooyah making the game console. Consumer electronics seems to be where a lot of the energy is going. And I thought this was an interesting comparison where Sachs is saying, you know what, a lot of the good ideas for web are taken. You know, and it's over. I disagree with him. I don't think it's over, but I think we might be seeing more hardware.
Yeah, I think we're getting to the point, especially in web services and apps. And I spend a lot of time trying out this stuff where I go, it looks nice. It works as advertised. But is it really fulfilling a need I have? No, it's like people are stumbling over themselves to try to be different and creative for the sake of doing something different. And we are getting to the point where more and more I'm thinking, I just don't need a lot of these great ideas that people are pouring their hearts and souls into because there is too much of an overlap. But yeah, the electronic sector, we talk about Kickstarter projects all the time. I mean, this is the sort of thing where people are saying, wouldn't it be nice if you could make something like this? I've never seen that watch company do anything like that. You raise enough money and you can actually put together something that's a viable product. And yeah, I don't think that people are running out of creative ideas.
No, definitely not.
And it's cyclical. I mean, the whole business cycle is very cyclical. Right now, we're in an era where there's a lot of noise for app development. And it wouldn't matter if a game-changing app was released right now because it would get lost in just the volume of stuff coming out. But what we are seeing in the Silicon Valley right now is there is a huge hiring glut. There are all these companies looking for developers right now, not for apps, but for hardware. I mean, just drive through San Francisco. On the way up, I saw at least 5 different billboards from companies saying, we're hiring. And I know 2 or 3 guys who have started startups here in the Silicon Valley, and they are just hurting for developers right now, and they're all hardware. So Silicon Valley isn't dead. It's going through another cycle, and it eventually will come back.
So the phase that comes after Web 2.0 is hardware 2.0?
The phase that comes after Web 2.0 is reality. So Web 2.0 was all about, let's take the existing data and figure out a nice way to present it. The next generation is, okay, we've sort of tapped out what we can do with the existing data. Let's now create new hardware that gets us more
wearable
data.
Computing.
Well, that's been promised for 20 years, but yeah.
I think we're closer than ever.
Well, the Nike Fuel Band you wear. I mean, there's some wearable computers these days.
That's true.
They've just changed in form. I mean, I know that with the joke box back there where you can hold an iPad on your arm, but I mean, it's not all the new watches that are coming out. I saw a New York Times piece about this, the rebirth of the watch. The wristwatch, because pretty much everyone got rid of it for their cell phones. But now they're coming back because they're linked to your phone. They can do a lot more data. So I'm thinking that the technology's gotten so cheap that you can make these devices. And I think there's been enough success stories on Kickstarter because people love those feel-good stories. Oh, wow, I had this idea and people backed it and I can make a real product. People think they can do this themselves. And I think that that's one of the reasons why hardware is getting more of a push. It's because it is being publicized that almost anybody with an idea can actually come up with a workable product because the tech has gotten so much cheaper to make anything nowadays.
Yeah, I think web companies have gotten saturated. That doesn't mean there aren't any new ideas. I agree with Mark Andreessen. There's an infinite number of new ideas, but it's not such a fertile playing ground where everyone is rushing in saying, oh, wow, we can take advantage of JavaScript and Ajax and do all these crazy things. You know, those days are long gone. Now it's more established, which means new ideas are not going to be raining down from the skies as they were for a while. But like you said, we're going to go to a new arena now, and I think that's really cool. That's
right. Like, for example, I'm developing right now hardware that can kill cars and car alarms. That's fantastic.
I don't know if people can hear, but there is an annoying car alarm going on right outside the studio. Let's finish up with AT&T's FaceTime. They're doing something great. They're going to allow FaceTime on the AT&T
network. You thought the car alarm was annoying. This is annoying. Okay, Apple obviously announced that FaceTime over cellular was going to be a part of iOS 6. AT&T just announced how you can get FaceTime over cellular as long as you have their mobile share data plan. If you have unlimited data because you're grandfathered in, like I think, Sarah, you have that, or if you have any of the tiered ones, you don't get to do that. AT&T did nicely say that, of course, you'll be able to use it over Wi-Fi. Well, of course, you've always been able to use it over Wi-Fi. So AT&T is not stopping you from using Skype for video chatting if you wanted or any other video chatting service. But for this particular thing, iOS 6 and FaceTime over cellular is going to be limited to this plan. If it's part of their scheme to get you to move away from unlimited data, I think that's crazy. But why on earth is FaceTime going to be that popular that they really think it's going to be a data hit?
Yeah, get me to move away from my legacy AT&T unlimited data account means getting me away from AT&T. And I'm not sure that that's the effect that they want.
Yeah, one of the things that a lot of these telcos forget is that when people make a change in their plan, typically they don't just change within the company. They take it as, oh, well, Now I get to try out someone else. My 2 years is up, or they're ticking me off. They're charging me too much for data. So I've been on AT&T. I'm switching to Verizon, or I'm moving to Sprint or T-Mobile. That's what I do. I think that's actually what a lot of people do. A fresh new network, a fresh new phone. Why am I going to put up with your shenanigans? I'm bringing back that word. Mm-hmm. If you're going to overcharge me and nickel and dime me for every service that I should have included in my plan already.
Yeah, I agree. I used a Fido Net prepaid SIM card when I was up in Canada on vacation. And it was amazing to be able to go and say, I would like to pay for this much data. Give me the card. I pop it in my phone. I use it. It worked great. And I didn't have to think about anything because I knew when I got to the end of my data, it would give me a little message. And then if I needed to, or if I wanted to, I'd pay a little more. It wasn't this sort of game of cat and mouse that I get if I was roaming on AT&T or even the game of cat and mouse on a plan that AT&T has now where they're like, well, don't go over your limit. It's just, I don't know.
I think AT&T, it just sounds like they don't really think a lot of people are going to be using FaceTime.
I think they don't want a lot of customers. They have too many customers. It's a pain
to manage all of them.
Their strategy is data discrimination. Yeah. That's their plan. Let's make sure that these bits will be over there and those bits are over there.
This network would be so much faster if it weren't for all these users.
It's too crowded.
Well, it's a Sprint model, isn't it?
Let's move on to the randomizer, shall we?
Randomizer.
You know, Disney does a great job of teaching the youth of today about dangers, including the dangers of open source. An episode aired Friday on the Disney Channel called Shake It Up features two teenagers begging a geeky kid for help with a computer. And the geeky kid says, did you use open source code to save time and the virus was hidden in it? Because we all know open source code much more likely to have the virus hidden in it. This is obviously a situation where a writer didn't know anything about what they were talking about, looked up a few quick buzzwords and threw them together. But it's got a lot of open source advocates really upset.
Because you're teaching kids the wrong way.
I don't know if people are watching Disney sitcoms for their programming information. I don't know. I mean, to learn about open source technology, I mean, maybe. Maybe
they're not but that's the point. They're not there to learn about open source technology. They're there to watch a kid's program, and then it teaches them open source means viruses.
It's
the people who want to learn about open source know that this is crap.
I think if you get that far into the episode, because if you actually watch that video, I mean, you have to have some kind of, patience. I don't know if you can watch this
We're
episode.
We're not the target audience.
No, I don't think so.
I'm almost 40, and I still remember Stranger Danger. So is there a new generation of kids who are going to be growing up watching this type of programming saying, oh, open source equals virus? That's, you know, yeah, if you're getting them young, they're going to remember stuff like that. And maybe it'll be like Stranger Danger. It's something funny that you say every once in a while. But at the same time, why on earth would you connect the two?
I think what the person who wrote the dialogue probably was thinking is, well, I need some terms that would be, you know, and I know about downloading and downloading free stuff. I guess that's open source. And so, yeah, it just shows a complete misunderstanding.
Well, this is like in movies, you know, like Sandra Bullock in The Net, where you watch it and you're like, God, this whole thing is so wrong, you know, and that's sort of the fun of it. This is just one more level of nobody checking the writer's work.
Well, they have less excuse in The Net where they've probably had some kind of script supervisor that should have looked into it. I doubt this kids show probably doesn't do a lot of tech checking.
They probably don't figure that people like us are going to sit around the table dissecting a line and how stupid this writer is. And don't they know that open source and viruses don't go hand in hand?
I can't believe that there wasn't at least one geek somewhere on the set or one of the actors who had even a little bit of computer knowledge who would say, wait, what was that line again?
That's probably how more of this doesn't happen is because there usually is somebody who catches it. And they're like, you might want to say download. Right. Open source. Anyway, let's move on. We got a lot on the calendar.
Let's open source the calendar. Dale's
no, there's
Arvin's...
a virus.
Disney told
me so. Gotcha. Monday. Pwned. Okay, Dell's earnings report is tomorrow. That's August 21st. Also tomorrow is Y Combinator Demo Day. It's happening at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California. Motorola has scheduled a press event for September 5th, calling it the day's main event.
Didn't that start Barbara Streisand?
Yes, yeah. I believe so. She'll be there as well. That's not true. And LG's Optimus Vue, which is, or Vue, the smartphone tablet hybrid 5-inch screen, is going to be available in a few markets, Europe, the Middle East, Africa, Latin America, starting in September. The international model is going to have a Tegra 3 chip, but it will not have LTE connectivity.
I bet. I know why they're calling it the main event. I get it now. Because Windows, Nokia, or Microsoft Nokia September 5th announcement is so they're saying don't pay attention to that one.
Yeah, we've got the main event, the cool circus ring.
Well, of course you do. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We do have a message. This is from a developer with an opinion on those Google Play gift cards that everyone's so excited.
AT&T crew, this is Matt. I just had a quick thing about the Google Play gift cards that you spoke about. I think on Thursday. As a developer, you know, it's really nice to be able to you know, give your apps out for free or for giveaways. You know, I really hope we see you know, promo codes like iOS does for Google Play coming up soon, so I can do giveaways and, you know, give the app out for free for testing or for reviews and stuff like that. Yeah, love the show. Have a good one. Thanks. Bye.
There you go. There's a reason.
Yeah, we were all baffled at the excitement of these little plastic cards. It's like, wow. And it was like all over every blog. And we're just like, okay, I guess it's again August.
It's the gift that keeps on giving until the balance is gone. We also have another voicemail about set-top boxes and why they are shaped the way they are.
Hello, TNT crew. This is Scott from Orangevale, California. Happy Manic Monday to you. On the topic of set-top boxes, one of the reasons they're so large is falls back to the size of an old technology that has been supplanted a couple of times, VCRs. VCRs typically and other home theater equipment was typically relatively large. And so set-top boxes were designed so that they could stack in a media system relatively easily and not look too bad. Unfortunately, we have odd-shaped devices now like the Xbox, PlayStation 3, the Boxy Box, and even some AVRs that don't fit that standard any longer. And so the set-top box now has become an ugly, out-of-shape device that just doesn't meet our needs any longer. Have a great show, guys. Thanks.
I almost forgot when all the boxes would just sit on top of the TV and there was this nice, clean stack.
Set-top
right.
boxes.
But the thing
yeah,
is,
literally.
The thing now with the Xbox, the PS3, the Boxy Box, the Q, and the Apple TV, everything's all these individual shapes that you could never stack unless you're doing some kind of contest like a Jenga thing.
Well, you won't get the chance to stack the Q.
Oh, I think I see a challenge.
Pre-ordered.
Get the cue.
It's really hard to stack anyway. That's a good thing.
They keep rolling.
But don't we want stackable components still, or am I just being an old man again?
Well, now there's no
Jenga.
I think it's because there's no set. You can't set anything on top of your TV anymore anyway. So
well, no, but underneath,
put it on,
right?
On the shelf. But you
on the shelf underneath, I would like to be able to stack a few things. They can be thin now. They don't have to be these big, fat boxes.
Oh.
Get off my lawn. Let's finish up with an email, shall we? Sarah, you want to take this one?
I would love to, Tom. Hey, TNT crew, this is from Joe. On episode 567, you guys discussed the use case for buying the Windows 8 tablet over Windows RT. I think a lot of people can't get past the term tablet and consider their usage to be limited. However, if a keyboard is to be included with the Windows 8 tablets, it actually becomes a MacBook Air competitor rather than an iPad competitor. Personally, as a web developer who likes to travel, this one device can cater for both of my needs. Love the show. Keep up the good work. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point of view because I'm really excited about the Surface because I want to have one device. I'm tired of having a laptop and a tablet and another tablet. Like, I want something that can do everything. And a full-on Windows machine that can be a tablet at times. I'm thrilled about that. Can you tell?
You look thrilled.
You seem thrilled.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
Do you see that as a MacBook Air competitor?
It can be. I was really, really jazzed by the included keyboard. I like the possibility that it could be used as a full-feature device rather than what I expect out of a tablet right now. Because when I pick up a tablet, I know it's not going to be a laptop. I still don't think of tablets as content creation devices. They're content consumption. I do a lot of content creation. If I can now do that on a Surface, absolutely I'm excited by it.
Yeah. I've been doing a lot more writing on the iPad, and I have to say I'm getting used to it, but it's still not as
fluid. Do you use
an
external keyboard?
No, I'm just using the tablet.
I feel like once you've got a good keyboard, like the Logitech ultra-thin keyboard cover snap-on,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that makes the iPad a MacBook Air competitor.
Sure, right.
It makes it does work differently, but it's a laptop. Really.
Well, I mean, for me, the tablet is a content creation device only as much as it is not convenient for me to get my laptop.
Yeah,
there will always be that point at which I say, you know what, I'm going to walk to the other room, grab my laptop from my bag, and use that because it'll be faster. So if you can get rid of that, if I can now be carrying around my tablet and I know that I can use it just as easily as I use my laptop, yes, that actually is a game changer. I know that's overused, but it is.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening, for submitting stories in our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. If you haven't checked it out, go there. There's thousands of people in there submitting stories and even just voting on the stories that get submitted. Let us know another perspective on what stories you'd like to see in the show each day. Father Robert Ballester, a pleasure as always. What's coming up on the next This Week in Enterprise Tech?
Well, today we're talking all about out-of-band management. So it's basically geeks who can reach across the seas and fix networks with a snap of their finger.
Ooh.
And we're also talking about unified threat management, which is a fancy way of saying firewalls, VPNs, all the cool things that you need to get into your network.
Excellent. Good stuff. Check that out at twit.tv/twiet if you don't catch it live. But it's live on Mondays at
noon. So 12 o'clock PDT.
All right. Thanks, everybody. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. And you can give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We had a couple good ones today. So join in. Why don't you? We'll see you tomorrow.